As we come to look at chapter 9, we're going to be looking at the whole encounter and the whole investigation that we see. And Mary read the first 16 verses of chapter 9 for us. But I want to pick up from verse 35 to read to the end of the chapter, just to help us give the broad scope. So reading from verse 35. Jesus heard that they had thrown him out. That was the man he had healed. And when he found him, he said, "Do you believe in the Son of Man?" "Who is he, sir?" the man asked. "Tell me so that I may believe in him." Jesus said, "You have now seen him. In fact, he is the one speaking with you." Then the man said, "Lord, I believe." And he worshipped him. Jesus said, "For judgment I have come into this world, so that the blind will see, and those who see will become blind." Some Pharisees who were with him heard him say this and asked, "What? Are we blind too?" Jesus said, "If you were blind, you would not be guilty of sin. But now that you claim you can see, your guilt remains." Amen. Now, I wonder if I was to say the following phrase to you, would you know which TV show it came from? Now, I'm not going to do the accent, but the phrase is, "Do you think I came up the lagging in a bubble?" Perhaps a few recognise the phrase. It's, of course, from Line of Duty. And there are generally mixed reviews and mixed viewpoints on Line of Duty. So if you've watched it, I'll not ask if you like it or whether you don't like it. But I'll declare my hand. I quite enjoy Line of Duty, and for that matter, other types of police and investigative dramas. In these shows, you'll often find the detectives across the table from the accused, asking lots of probing questions, trying to find out exactly what happened during an alleged crime, and perhaps trying to even find the person that committed the crime. But what, you might be asking, does this have to do with our passage today? Well, John chapter 9 functions quite like an investigation at times, following the events of the man born blind being given his sight by Jesus. And as we journey through the chapter, you'll see different groups of people being questioned by the investigating Pharisees, trying to figure out how this man's sight was restored, particularly because it was restored on the Sabbath, which meant, in their view, that Jesus had broken the law, and they were already looking for a reason to arrest Jesus at that time. In fact, just prior to this event, at the end of John chapter 8, John tells us that they had tried to kill Jesus. Such was their anger against him. But why were they trying to kill Jesus? Who exactly is Jesus, whom the Pharisees felt so strongly against? Well, as we journey through chapter 9, we'll discover who John tells us Jesus is through the encounter of the man born blind and what he has with Jesus. We'll learn that Jesus is the one who makes our blind eyes see, not just the eyes of the man born blind. We're going to look first at our condition through the situation of the man born blind. Then we will look at Jesus' credentials, what qualifies him to be the one that we follow. And finally, at our response, or our confession, in light of seeing Jesus for who he is. So first, our condition. Chapter 9 is bookended with the topic of blindness. It begins with the man born blind being physically blind and ends with the Pharisees asking, are they blind too? Albeit they are talking about a different sort of blindness. In John's Gospel, we find fewer accounts of miracles that Jesus performs and fewer stories of Jesus' interactions with people. But each encounter that we do have in John's Gospel is there that we might discover something deeper about Jesus. The miracles Jesus performs has a spiritual message for us. So when we read of the man born blind being given his sight, the miracle, as incredible as it is, tells us something about our spiritual state as well. That people have a spiritual blindness that only Jesus can heal. The man's condition helps emphasize how dire our spiritual condition is without Jesus. We read at the beginning of the chapter that as Jesus passed by, he saw a man blind from birth. And that detail that John has included matters. This man hadn't had an accident in the course of his life that had caused him to be blind, and where healing may have been possible, or contracted an illness where he just needed the right treatment. This man had been born blind from birth, and there was nothing that could be done for him in order to heal his blindness. His situation was dire. And you know, it wouldn't have just been his blindness that would have made his life so dire. But because of his condition, he wouldn't have been able to work. He wouldn't have been able to make a living for himself. We're told in verse 8 that he used to sit and beg. And it is likely that his social status within the community would have been non-existent. And we can see this in the questions that the disciples ask Jesus to explain how this man came to be blind. Was it his sin or the sin of his parents? If the disciples thought this, that the man was sinful, I think we can be sure that those in the community thought the same. That this man was blind because of his or his family's sin. And with sin, with visible sin, there's shame in the Middle Eastern culture. And in that culture of shame and honor, this man's blindness didn't just have a physical impact on him, but it had a dire impact on his entire life. And the man's blindness is a representation for our spiritual condition without Jesus. Psalm 51, verse 5 tells us of how we are sinful from birth. And in Romans 3, verse 23, says that we have all sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. Our spiritual situation is dire. And we can do nothing on our own to change it. We need Jesus. And you know, the man would not have even seen Jesus approaching. He didn't call out to Jesus in this passage. And yet, Jesus steps in. Jesus takes the initiative to heal the man. The man was completely helpless. He needed Jesus' help. And so do we. Jesus answers the disciples' question about who had sinned. He dispels their thinking that it was because of the man's sin or because of his parents' sin that he was blind. But that through Jesus stepping into the man's situation, the works of God would be displayed, that we can see God's glory at work in Jesus healing the man. And often there is still this sort of thinking around, like that of the disciples today. Sometimes in other world religions, where reincarnation is part of their belief system, and if you've done something wrong, perhaps in a past life, that impacts your circumstances in the next life cycle. Perhaps you've heard that. And it's not biblical. And yet, I often hear people in Northern Ireland saying something like this. Perhaps they've done something wrong to warrant this. Now, the Bible does teach us that we are all sinful beings, that we all fall short of God's standards. And at times, our situation can be the result of our sinful choices and behaviors. But here, the man born blind and his healing displays the glory of God at work. Perhaps instead of being like the disciples and focusing on the sin of the man, when we look at those around us, let us follow the example of Jesus. Jesus, when he saw the man, he loved him and chose to redeem him from his circumstances. He stepped down. Jesus got his hands dirty. He made mud and put it on the man's eyes and sent him to the pool to wash. The man did exactly as Jesus said and came home seeing. The disciples stood at a distance discussing the man's sin, but Jesus drew near. And as we look at those around us, do we see people made in the image of God, loved so much that he sent his son to die for them? Or do we see their sin, their shortcomings, the things they have done that have brought them to where they are? The man's condition was dire without Jesus. Our condition is dire without Jesus. It's he that can make our blind eyes see. But why is it that he is the one who can do this? That's the question we're left with as the investigation begins after this event. Well, it's because of Jesus' credentials, which is our second point. His qualifications as the one sent from God the Father, with all of the authority and the power of the Father. These credentials are discussed at length throughout this investigation that the Pharisees then do. Jesus, firstly, himself says in conversation with his disciples that he is the light of the world, and that while he is in the world, he must do the works of the one who sent him. He explains that he has been sent into the world to be the light. He has been sent by God. And I wonder, does that draw your mind back to John chapter 1, verse 4, that in him was life, and that life was the light of all mankind. Jesus is the light of the world, and light enables people to see. Warren Wiersbe comments regarding this light, that the same sun that brings beauty out of the seeds also exposes the vermin hiding under the rocks. The light of Jesus breaks through, causing the good to flourish, and reveals the messy and unpleasant things in us and in our world. We need Jesus' light for us to see what our condition is, our sin, our messiness. But we also need his light to be able to see him. So Jesus first introduces his credentials as the one sent from God. But then there is also a discussion had between the man born blind, his neighbours, and the Pharisees about who exactly Jesus is. First, the man's neighbours want to know how the man could be able to see. After all, they probably had known him all his life, and he'd always been blind. How would it have been possible for someone to heal his blindness, they thought. The man replied, recounting what had happened, giving his evidence, knowing that Jesus was the name of his healer, but he wouldn't have been able to identify him in a lineup. After all, you'll notice in the passage that the man hasn't set his newly seeing eyes on Jesus at this point. He'd been sent, after Jesus had put mud on his eyes, he'd been sent away to wash, and Jesus wasn't there when he went to the pool. The Pharisees then question the man, and verse 16 highlights the Pharisees' concern over the event that had taken place on the Sabbath. They say Jesus could not be from God because in their eyes he doesn't keep the Sabbath, because he did work on the Sabbath. He made clay and he healed someone, which fell under their category of work. And James Montgomery Boyce outlines the irony of this when the Pharisees state that they were ready to kill Jesus for breaking the Sabbath, but they were not prepared to let him heal on it. The Pharisees were blinded by their own legalism and rules. Jesus himself, when asked what the greatest commandment in the law is, says, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. And the second is like this, love your neighbor as yourself. All the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments." The Pharisees could not see Jesus as from God because he did not uphold what their view of the Sabbath was. Yet Jesus himself says that God's law is to love and to bring life to others. Ironically, the Pharisees would rather have sought the death of Jesus. And Jesus, at another point in time, in Luke chapter 4, also gives us his credentials when he, in the synagogue in Nazareth, opens the scroll and reads, "The Spirit of the Lord is on me, because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners, and recovery of sight for the blind, to set the oppressed free, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." Jesus here proclaims that he is the fulfillment of this prophecy, that he has come to fulfill the law and the prophets. And this prophecy is found in Isaiah chapter 61. He says here, he has come to give sight to the blind, not just physically, but spiritual blindness. And just before the healing of the blind man in chapter 8, Jesus tells the Pharisees directly that he has been sent from the Father, and that is why they wanted to kill him. He tells them that before Abraham existed, he was in existence. He was from the Father and have been sent to bring freedom, redemption, sight from blind to the physically and spiritually blind. These claims that Jesus was making were highly controversial at that time. And we can see that in the reaction of the Pharisees where they try to kill him. And throughout chapter 9, we can follow then the trajectory of the man born blind's journey as he discovers Jesus' credentials. As he first calls him the man they call Jesus, then a prophet, as prophets were known to be miracle workers at that time, so he points them to a different aspect of who Jesus is. But as he is further interrogated by the Pharisees, he argues that someone who could heal like this must be from God, must have the power and authority from God. The man doesn't know everything about Jesus, but in verse 25, he testifies to what he does know. He says, "Whether he, Jesus, is a sinner or not, I do not know. But one thing I do know. I was blind, but now I see." What humility to acknowledge that we don't know everything, but we can testify to what we do know. The man speaks of his experience of what Jesus has done in his life. He testifies to Jesus' power and authority over his blindness. And by verse 33, he states that if this man was not from God, he could do nothing. Even in the midst of interrogation by the Pharisees, which must have been terrifying, because they were the religious leaders of the time. They held all authority in that culture. The man's encounter with Jesus had given him boldness and confidence to speak about Jesus, who had made his blind eyes see. And you know, in doing so, the man was thrown out. He was cast out. And this would not have been a minor thing. This would have meant social exclusion in that culture, to be cast out by the Pharisees. And I wonder, have you ever acknowledged Jesus' credentials? Perhaps confessing to be a Christian to others in your workplace, in your school, in your family even, only to be excluded. Finding yourself outside of the group chats or not included to invites because of believing in Jesus. Being bold for and acknowledging who Jesus is may involve a cost, and yet in the man's exclusion, Jesus draws near once more. As we speak boldly of who Jesus is, we can be assured that he draws near to us, that we may be excluded by those of this world, but when we follow Jesus, we are included in the family of God. And finally, as we look at the end of the chapter, we want to consider our confession. In verse 35, Jesus becomes the person asking the questions. The tables are turned. He asks the man if he believes in the Son of Man and reveals to the man that he is in fact the Son of Man, this prophesied figure sent from God to bring God's authority, presence, and judgment on the world. The man responds in verse 38, by saying, "Lord, I believe." He confesses his belief. And Warren Wiersbe states that the greatest miracle that we see here was not the opening of his eyes, but the opening of his heart to the Savior. It cost him everything to confess Jesus as the Son of God, but he was willing to do it. By the end of his encounter with Jesus, the man born blind sees Jesus for who he is, both physically and spiritually. Yet the Pharisees are the one who finish the encounter blind and unable to see who Jesus is. I wonder, is the man born blind's confession our confession too? Have we experienced the miracle of having our spiritually blind eyes opened by Jesus, that we can confess with the man in the story that we too believe that Jesus is the Son of Man, that he is sent from God, And as John chapter 1 tells us, is God, that Jesus came to open the eyes of the blind that we might see him for who he is and respond in the same way as the blind man in worship. The blind man could do nothing to help himself in his dire state. We can do nothing to help ourselves in our dire spiritual state. But when Jesus steps in and when we confess our belief in him, we can respond in worship with the blind man, thanking and praising God that we once were blind, but now we see. That because of God's great love for us shown in sending Jesus to the cross, we can be in relationship with our Heavenly Father and acknowledge with the Church of the Ages that Jesus is Lord. Let us rejoice today that Jesus Christ is the one who makes our blind eyes see.